broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
Welcome, everyone, to the Refresh Your Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen. It's going to be an amazing hour today. I'm excited to be with you. Now, I've got a substitute co-host today, Kevin Kennedy, who's going to be joining me. And he is an expert in some of the topics we'll be talking about. Mark Kohler's on an administrative leave of absence. He got into some trouble, let's just say. And so we had to take a leave of absence. But no, seriously, he's on a family vacation. don't let your mind start jumping to anything there. I shouldn't have said that.
Yeah.
But Kevin's here with me, and he'll be going through the topic, which today we're going to be talking about choosing the right retirement plan for you and your future. Now, for a lot of people, this is a year-end thing. People are starting to think about this at year-end for tax planning. And really, it's just a thing everyone needs to think about because retirement accounts have become one of the number one savings tool for people who go into retirement. And we want to talk about the benefits of the different types of accounts and what type of account you may want to use in your specific situation. So I'm excited for this. As you guys know, I'm a geek on the subject. I got a book, The Self-Directed IRA Handbook, and so I'm all about retirement accounts, and it's a pleasure to be able to have this topic today. Now, Kevin is actually kind of he's been the expert among anyone else in the office on solo 401ks in particular, and so he'll be talking about those. We'll have a future show actually on solo 401ks just in and of itself in November when we do our solo 401k special. And stay tuned to our newsletter for details on that. But, Kevin, we're going to try not to talk over each other like the vice presidential debate. I don't know if you watched that.
I didn't catch it.
Okay.
I didn't even see it.
All right. Well, I'm going to do my best to not be like Tim Kaine because he talked over Mike Pence about every time he could. but we're here together, so hopefully we'll avoid that. But did you watch Trump versus Hillary?
I saw
Hillary?
That, yeah.
Okay, what did you think?
You know, it was kind of like watching mud wrestling. You know, it was ugly.
And neither of those looked good in a bikini either, right? So I think that's the only reason people watch mud wrestling. So, all right, well, let's get into the topics today, and let's just start off the show. But before we get into the topics, of course, we like to give a tax and legal tip, and I think Kevin's going to be fielding the tax tip today.
A tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
Since today's topic is going to be about retirement plans, and one of the main reasons you have a retirement plan is the income tax is deferred, well, my tax tip is another vehicle that can provide some income tax deferred benefits. And so the tip here is on 1031 exchanges. If anyone has real estate, they'll know what that is. If you don't, it's basically an opportunity for you to take one property that you're going to sell, and instead of paying tax on that, if you do this 1031 exchange and you buy another property, you can basically kick the can down the road in terms of income tax. And so a 1031 exchange is something that our office gets questions about on a fairly regular basis. And so the tax tip, first of all, is just knowing that, hey, if you've got real estate, keep that on your radar. That's the first tip, Matt. And then just related to that is a little more technical tip. If you are familiar with 1031 exchanges, you know, I get calls quite frequently about this, and people make the mistake. They don't realize that for the 1031 exchange to work, the taxpayer who owns the property that's going to sell the property has to match up with the taxpayer who's going to then buy the property. You can't sell your property and then somehow have those tax benefits go to your brother or something. The taxpayers have to match up. So not to go too deep or be too technical, but that's the tax tip map is 1031 exchanges. It's a great vehicle in terms of income tax deferred benefits.
Okay, so you're selling a property, you don't pay taxes on it, but you have to reinvest it within some certain time periods into a new piece of property, and that's the 1031 exchange. But the common, I think, example for your tip is, let's say I own property in an LLC that I'm selling, and I want to do a 1031 exchange. I don't want to pay taxes on the gain. I want to just buy a new property, but maybe I buy the new property in my personal name. Well, that's going to be a problem because even though I own the LLC, if I'm personally going to be the owner on the new property or a different LLC, that taxpayer is going to change. The name is different. So there's some common problems like that. A little bit of planning before you sell the property can sometimes fix that. You can do some deed transfers just to make sure that the seller and new replacement buyer matches up. So love that. We've been talking about 1031 exchanges quite a bit. We'll be doing a show actually just on 1031 exchanges. They kind of died for a while, you know, because people frankly weren't having a lot of gain on real estate, but they've really ramped up as the real estate market's recovered and we've seen appreciation. People are making money again on selling property for profit,
right,
which is awesome.
Right, they're back.
All right, now I'm going to give the legal tip here.
A legal tip that you can actually use.
A legal tip where you don't feel like you have to take a shower after.
This legal tip is about raising money and not going to jail, okay? So, but I want to give a tip, I think, that goes, I think, out of people's minds sometimes when they think of raising money. A lot of times we hear about raising money and people think, oh, I got to go get a registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission, or oh, I got to do this big private placement memorandum and draft all these documents, and I got a mountain of paperwork and $10,000 in fees, and you know, we can help with that. Trust me. I mean, we can help with those things. And I'm not just saying that because of the tens of thousands of dollars of fees, but we do help with those, and those are good for certain people. But one of the more common ways, and probably the most common way, to raise money for a new business or a new real estate investment is partnerships. And we work with a lot of clients who do those. Basically, what you do is you have a partnership agreement. One person's responsibility is to put in cash. Another party's responsibility is to do the work. And you may have a couple people whose responsibility is to put in cash. Everybody gets some ownership based on what they're doing, whether it's putting in cash or doing work. And then that LLC is formed. Everybody's got some voting rights. And now you've raised some money. You've got an LLC, a formal agreement between everybody. Everybody's got a say in what's going on. But you can have one person that's really running the business or doing the work, making the decisions, kind of carrying the day-to-day stuff out. But everyone else still has voting rights and is involved. And that's a great structure. It avoids securities laws. You don't have to do a PPM or register anything or do any SEC or state securities reporting. You're really just setting up an LLC, making sure everyone has voting rights and having a good operating agreement for the LLC. So keep that in mind. I do have a blog article that went out a week or two ago on using partnerships or joint ventures and making sure you're keeping those type of agreements and LLCs in compliance with the securities laws. So that's your tip here from the legal tip hotline on raising money, and just make sure you're keeping that one in mind. For some reason, it just gets forgotten, and some people just skip over it and think they need to do something more complex. All right, now we have our question of the week that I want to get out today before we get into the topic. Last week, we did not have a question of the week, so there's nothing to report back on in terms of winners. But as you guys know, the winner of the question of the week gets a free copy of mine or Mark's books, either Mark's newest book, The Tax and Legal Playbook, or my book, The Self-Directed IRA Handbook. It's free. It comes signed. We even ship it. It's none of this shipping and handling fee nonsense, you know. So, but write in with the correct answer to Matt, M-A-T, or Mark, M-A-R-K, at kkoslawyers.com, either Matt or Mark at kkoslawyers.com, or send it to both, frankly, so you make sure you get in. So the person with the correct answer that writes in the soonest wins. Now, the question I have for this week actually relates a little bit to raising money, too. And I made this simple, guys, because I'm a lover. I'm just trying to make it easy. I want you guys to just, you know, you're going to have a 50-50 shot because I did it true-false. So you just stop what you're doing when you hear this and just email in right away, true or false. Put question of the week and write true or false, even if you have no idea of the answer. You got a 50-50 shot, okay? What do you got to lose? The question for this week is, true or false, do most states have an exemption in the securities laws that allows you to raise money for real estate and secure it as debt in a first deed of trust position against the real property purchased? So again, true or false, can you raise money outside of the securities laws and have an exemption to the securities laws so long as you receive the money as debt and record a first deed of trust in on the property where you use the funds to purchase the real estate? Again, write into MAT or MARK at kqslawyers.com with the correct answer. And we'll announce the winner on next week's show and ship out a free copy of Mine or Mark's book. All right. Now let's get into the topic today. And let's start talking about choosing the right retirement account for your future. And when we talk about this topic, it's sometimes overwhelming because we hear IRA, 401k, simple, SEP, Roth, traditional, pension plan, all these words and buzzwords, and some of it means something to you, some of it doesn't, some of it you understand, some of it you don't, some of it doesn't matter for your situation, but it might for someone else, and so it's a big topic. We're going to try and break it down, though, and we're going to break it down into three components. The first thing I want to talk about is, should you use an IRA or a 401k? Very basic. Who's good fit for IRAs? Who's a good fit for 401ks? Next, we're going to talk about using a SEP IRA versus a solo 401k for the self-employed peeps out there. I mean, we want to talk about your planning because you actually have some of the best benefits out there. So we want to make sure you in particular know your options in saving for retirement using a retirement account. We also want to talk about when to choose Roth versus traditional. I mean, we could talk about that for a whole show, mm-hmm. pros and cons between Roth and traditional. And it really depends. It's not like everyone should do a Roth or everyone should do a traditional. We're going to try and break it down so you know, in your situation, should I be doing Roth or should I be doing traditional? And then we'll talk about maybe a couple other perks with retirement accounts, doing Roth conversions, or maybe even doing the backdoor Roth IRA. So that's what we're going to tackle today. I just wanted to give the roadmap so everybody knew where we were going with the subject matter today. As I said, Kevin's here with me. He's going to be helping me break these subjects down. We're going to try and keep it interesting. And I also want to give examples. So when we go through this, I don't want to just say you could do this or you could do that. I want to say here's an example of someone that's a good fit for this, or here's why it works well. Here's someone that this type of account works well for. So we try and keep it practical as we go today. But Kevin, anything you want to say as before we dive into this, or you got your life jacket on, you're ready to jump?
Yeah, I know I'm not as entertaining as Mark Kohler. These are big shoes to fill. Luckily, it's just for today's radio show. But I do think that this is an important topic. And I think your points are well taken. I mean, definitely there's going to be a lot of this that some people might not, it might not apply to them. But hopefully as we talk through this, there's going to be at least one or two, morsels of goodies that will help you, in your life and what you want to do and which road to go down. So I'm excited. I think it's as exciting as retirement accounts and, tax deductions can be. This is going to be fun.
We'll have some delicious morsels of information today. I haven't had lunch yet, so I was thinking of chocolate chips, actually, when you said that. I don't know why. I just was. Particularly butterscotch Ooh. Chips. I guess those aren't chocolate. I don't know why. That's a fall thing for me, butterscotch chips. Anyways. All right, moving right along here. Okay, let's start up with the big topic of IRA versus 401k. Should you be doing an IRA or should you be doing a 401k? Now, IRAs are individual retirement accounts. So the only qualification you have to do an IRA is you must be an individual. All of you listening today are individuals. You qualify for an IRA, okay? Congratulations. The trick is you have to have earned income to contribute to it. So you have to actually be making some money of which you can then use that money to contribute. Now, the vast majority of our IRA clients are actually rollover IRAs. They didn't start with an IRA. They didn't put $5,500 in a year as an IRA. Most of them rolled over money from a prior 401k, or maybe they have some other type of IRA over the years, and they've accumulated multiple sources of retirement plan dollars that they roll over into an IRA. And so if that's like a self-directed IRA client that's, you know, buying real estate or something, they've accumulated that over time, and they're in an IRA rolling over funds. They're not just putting in $5,500 a year, because that takes a while, because that's how much you can put in an IRA, $5,500 a year. Now, we're going to talk about Roth IRAs in particular later on. But again, think of IRAs as anyone can have it. It's easy. Most of the time, when you're making particularly self-directed investments, you're using an IRA as a rollover. You're rolling over existing retirement plan dollars you have. Now, a 401k, on the other hand, must be established by an employer. Individuals can't create IRAs. You have to work for a company that provides a 401k. Now, this might be your own company, and Kevin's going to talk about self-employed people doing a 401k for yourself because you're such a good employee. Why not? and make it as generous as possible. if you're working somewhere that has a 401k, generally the typical advice from any advisor or financial planner is contribute to that 401k, max it out to the extent you can get matching from your company at least. And you know, most companies have a match on their 401k, and that's free money. The company's putting that money in if you put in a certain amount of money. But also you can put up to $18,000 of just pure employee contributions into a 401k. Even if you work at a company, you work at ABC Inc., you know, or what, a Fortune 500 company. I mean, you can at least put in $18,000 of your own earnings into that 401k, and it could be Roth or traditional. And then the company does some matching. So keep in mind, I want to make that distinction early on. IRAs, individual accounts, 401ks must be created by an employer. All right. Now, 401ks are really a good option, too, I just wanted to say, for putting more money away. You're going to be able to get a lot more money in. Like I said, even if you work for a company, you can at least put 18 grand in a year of your own money. Versus 5,500 still in the IRA. So it's, you get a lot more bang for your buck, an opportunity to put money into the retirement account. Anything you want to add on IRA versus 401k though, Kevin?
Yeah, I think one of the questions that I get a lot of times from clients, you know, if they have a 401k at work, is, you know, just knowing that typically a 401k plan with your employer, you know, your big Fortune 500 company that you work for or whatever, they're going to have, you know, restrictions that aren't going to let you, you know, roll that over into like a self-directed IRA if you wanted to do that. And so that's sometimes just something that practically comes up where, you know, we'd love to be able to help you if you wanted to do a self-directed IRA. But if your retirement account is a 401k with a big, you know, employer, even a small employer, you work for somebody else, there's probably going to be restrictions as long as you're working for them that you're not going to be able to do that. Once you leave the company, of course, then like what Matt talked about, that's where a lot of people have an IRA that they rolled over from a 401k. And then at that point, you could self-direct that. So that's one point. And then two, another question that sometimes comes up is, you know, if you have a 401k at work, can you not also have an IRA on the side? And should you? Is there any reason why you'd want to have both? And so with some restriction, you know, you can have both, you know, if you're really trying to get as much money as you can into retirement accounts, what have you. The only restrictions are certain income, like I think if you're married, if your joint income is over, I think it's like $118,000, you can't make IRA contributions. But otherwise, you can have both if you wanted to, if you had enough, you know, income to do that.
Yeah, and we'll talk about the backdoor Roth IRA, which is what I do. I love this strategy. But we're going to come to that at the end because you got to have the framework here of everything else. But essentially what that is I max out my 401k at work here at the law firm, and then I also do a backdoor Roth IRA. So I'm putting money into a Roth IRA every year, and I'm maxing out my 401k. It's a pretty cool strategy. So we'll come back to that, though. One other thing I want to say, too, is we keep saying the large, you know, your Fortune 500 401k. This could also be your crappy Dunder Mifflin 401k planner, you know, that your boss, Michael Scott, set up for you and that you had to fill out some forms with Toby and HR to sign up for. It could be that 401k plan as well.
True.
Okay. Well, all right. Now let's start getting in, though, to this SEP versus solo 401k and talk to the self-employed crowd. And Kevin, I'm going to let you lead that here. You know, if I'm self-employed, what options do I have in terms of a retirement account and what should I be thinking about?
Right. And I think for most of our clients, you know, who are self-employed, if they have a good accountant, you know, the main issue is getting that tax deduction. You know, hopefully if your business is doing well, you're looking for ways to reduce your taxable income in any way you can. And so retirement plan contributions, those are great tax deductions. So now you can do that and you can take advantage of those tax deductions, whether you have a SEP IRA or whether, you know, you have a 401k. So, you know, we offer solo 401ks, which are basically for those self-employed folks who don't have any employees. And so as far as, you know, the difference between, well, I'm self-employed and I don't have any employees, so should I do a SEP IRA or should I do a solo 401k?
Give me an example of someone. Give me, like, an example of a type of person that's in that scenario typically.
Yeah, so, I mean, a lot of our clients, you know, their businesses are in all the different industries you can think of. So let's say someone, you know, is a plumber. Okay, Joe the plumber. Remember Joe the plumber from the, yeah, I think, the Romney election a few years ago? So Joe the plumber comes in, and, you know, he's got a small business he's had for a number of years. And so he just wants to know, because his accountants told him, hey, Joe, you're doing pretty well. Let's think of some ways to reduce your taxable income in your business. You should set up a retirement plan. All right, well, should you do a SEP or should you do a 401k? And this, you know, the nice thing about a SEP IRA, and what I always tell people, you know, and what I tell Joe the plumber, is, you know, setting up a SEP IRA is very simple. You know, there's basically a form you fill out. You can, you know, go to a bank, you know, down the road and get that set up, and they'll take care of it. And then at that point, you can make your contributions into your SEP IRA. So it's very easy to set up. It's very easy to administer. But maybe I'm partial, Matt, but I do think that there's a couple reasons why, despite the fact that a SEP IRA is great, it's simple to set up, you can contribute you know, a lot more than you can out of, like, a regular IRA. You can contribute up to 25% of your compensation. So that's pretty good.
Up to
$53,000 in a year. So there are some limits, but that's obviously almost five times, you know, if you have that income in your business, five times greater than a regular IRA. So a SEP IRA is great.
Yeah. So if I'm in a SEP, I'm making $200,000 a year approximately. I'm going to be able to put 25% of what I make, well, basically about $50,000 there, right into the SEP IRA. That's a $50,000 tax deduction. This is a high five moment. If you've seen Mark Kohler speak, this is where he goes to someone on the front row and gives them a high five. Because you're saving big time on taxes there. Because let's not forget, why are we even talking about retirement accounts, okay? You get a tax deduction when you're putting the money in there. So that SEP IRA, oh my gosh, I just got a $50,000 tax deduction. I made $200,000 this year. You think that's going to help you on your taxable, on your tax return? Yeah, that's probably going to save you like $20,000 in taxes right there. Or for you people in California, maybe $25,000. So, I mean, because, you know, you guys are really getting bent over. So the relief is even better. But the other thing to think about is we're building this account of long-term wealth. And I want to say this too. Why else are we trying to get money in these retirement accounts? Well, once I get money in the retirement account, now it's growing tax deferred if it's a traditional account, or tax free if it's Roth. So I got this pool of money now that I can invest and make more money with, and I have to pay taxes on it. It's like this little free account you get. The government says, all right, go make money now, and whatever you do in this account, you don't have to pay taxes on. Everything else you have, though, you're going to pay tax on. So it's a really good deal. The last cool thing about retirement accounts is asset protection's awesome. You can file bankruptcy, you know, and still keep your retirement account. You can have creditors chasing you down. They can't get into your retirement account. And so there's a lot of perks to retirement accounts. And there's some differences on creditor protection between IRAs and 401ks. But really, they're the some for all retirement accounts, they're some of the most protected, sacred type of accounts creditors can't get into. So I want to keep the perspective here of why are we talking about socking a bunch of money away in these retirement accounts. So now besides the SEP, so you were starting to talk about the 401k instead for Joe the plumber, self-employed, or this could be, you know, Sally the proctologist too, you know, whatever type of plumbing work you're in, you know, the retirement accounts are for you. And it doesn't have, you know, this is not plumbing exclusive type of thing here. So, all right. So, sorry, you were saying.
Yeah, I like that. I like let's talk about Sally the proctologist a little bit more. Yeah, that's good. If Sally were sitting here, then, yeah, we've talked about the SEP IRA, but why I'm a little bit partial to the solo 401k is if you have enough income in your business, you can actually make the 25% of your compensation. You can do that contribution, which you can do out of the SEP IRA as well. But the benefit of the 401k is you can also make that additional $18,000 employee contribution. So depending on your income levels, you know, where Matt's example, if Sally, you know, she's doing well as a proctologist. And so, you know, if she's making $300,000 or whatever, in both cases with the SEP IRA and a solo 401k, you're basically capped at $53,000. But, you know, if your income level is less than that, there are lots of examples where because you can make that additional $18,000 as an employee in your business, that you can sometimes and oftentimes contribute more into the solo 401k than you can out of the SEP IRA. And then the other quick thing about contributions is with the 401k, you know, let's say Sally went to medical school late in life and now she's a proctologist at the, you know, she's 53, but she's only been in practice for 5 years. She's got some catching up to do in her retirement account. Well, she can contribute an additional $6,000 if she's using a solo 401k. And with a SEP IRA, they don't give you those catch-up contributions is what they're called. So dollar for dollar, you can put more money in the solo 401k than you can in a SEP IRA.
Yeah, and so I gave the SEP IRA example takes about $200,000 to get $50,000 into it. Now you have the same total contribution max for a 401k. I mean, it's both 53-53, so that's the max you can do. Now again, as Kevin said, if you're over 50 in the solo K, you get an extra $6,000 that you don't get in the SEP. So that's nice for those over 50. But why we're saying you can get more in the 401k is it takes less income to max out. So on the SEP, I have to have about $200,000, a little over $200,000 to max it out. In the solo 401k, they only need to have made about $138,000 to max that out. So it's easier to max out. You can always put more money in on the solo than you can a SEP. That's why we like it and it's better for contributions. But another perk also, I mean, the loan option, that's different between the SEP and the solo, right?
It is, yeah. And so not that you should just do a 401k to take a loan, but that is one of the benefits. And if you use that strategically, you know, then I think you can find, and we help clients on this topic, if you're going to do a 401k, you know, and you want to take out a 401k loan, there's so many ways you can use that money. And so not that all of our clients are real estate investors, but we do have many that are. And so sometimes clients will do the solo 401k, take out the 401k loan, and use some of that money as down payments on rental properties on their personal investments. You can use that money to pay down debt. I mean, there's really no limit to how you can use that money. And so it's just one more additional way that you can legitimately use your retirement account without tax penalties. And one of the other reasons why I think the 401k, you know, all things being equal, tends to have a little bit of an advantage over the SEP.
Yeah, and I like the loan benefit because for those that are aggressive about getting money into their retirement account, they're like, man, I'm just going to work hard to max out every year, which I love. I mean, that's what I'm trying to do. But it's a lot easier in the 401k because you're like, oh my gosh, if I have a bad month or quarter, and you self-employed people know what I'm talking about, it's nice to know I can get out 50 grand from the 401k as a loan to cover some, you know, a bad quarter or year even, or, you know, month, whatever it may be. Whereas if you socked all that money away in the SEP, sorry, you're not going to be able to touch it. You have no access to do this 401k loan. So it's kind of cool in that regard. A lot of other purposes, obviously, to do the 401k loan, pay down high interest debt. You got credit cards. That'd be another good perk. But now, what about someone though, Kevin, that maybe it works at somewhere, you know, maybe Dunder Mifflin, they got a 401k there, but they also have some self-employment on the side, their own little business. What options do they have?
They still have the same options. So, you know, there's no requirement that you have to be self-employed full time to be able to have a SEP IRA or have a solo 401k. You can definitely, you know, be working in the warehouse in Scranton, Pennsylvania, you know, working for Daryl, and have some side and, you know, self-employment on the side. So you still have options, but it doesn't. What it doesn't do is somehow give you greater contribution limits as the employee. So you can't all of a sudden be an employee for Dunder Mifflin contributing $18,000 and also, you know, be working for yourself on the side and all of a sudden have twice the contribution limit. So you still have those caps, but you do have that ability if you wanted to have, you know, two 401ks or a 401k with your company and a SEP IRA on the side. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now for those, we talked about people self-employed mostly that don't have other employees. That's kind of the SEP or the solo K structure you've talked about. What about though, if you do have employees, you have a small business, you have some other people, you know, this could be just a handful of employees. This could be hundreds of employees. What options do you have there in terms of saving yourself a retirement account and setting up a retirement account for your company?
Yeah. So when you have, you know, hopefully your business does well, and like any business, if it's doing well, you need help. And so, you know, eventually you hopefully do have employees potentially. And, what that does is it doesn't take things off the table as far as your options, but it does kind of change the administration of the type of account you have. I mean, a SEP IRA can be for just a sole proprietor, or it can be for a business owner who has five or six, you know, employees. A solo 401k does have to just be for the business owner, maybe their spouse. So if you're going to, you know, hopefully grow your business and have employees, just know that, you know, you can still have something very comparable to a solo 401k. Our office actually does those. It's called a group self-directed 401k plan, and it's kind of a hybrid. It's sort of a way to sort of try to keep administrative costs, you know, at bay, because, you know, obviously with whether it's Dunder Mifflin or a big Fortune 500 company, they have a lot of expenses just in maintaining the 401k plan, you know, to something that large. So,
yeah. And so, I mean, that's obviously common in the business world, is these 401ks. And, you know, if you have a business with other employees and you want to start saving yourself, you're going to have to do a 401k and offer it to your employees. So the 401k rules don't allow you to just say, well, I want to just do a 401k for me, but my other employees in the business, I don't want to let them participate. It doesn't work that way. You'd have to offer it to all employees. The solo K works because you're just the only one there. You know, you don't have any other employees. But if you do have other full-time employees that have worked for you for a year or over age 21, then you'd have to adopt this group 401k plan. Now, the group, I just want to give two caveats to the group. Is it's more expensive because you have to have a platform. Like, we use Nationwide or Ubiquity, or you could also have, you know, Vanguard or Fidelity or whoever. You have to have a platform that has investment options for all the employees. If they want to buy mutual funds or whatever it may be, I mean, there has to be a platform available to them, which would be available to you as well. But you can also self-direct your account within the plan. Like here at the law firm, we have our 401k plan in the law firm. I'm the trustee of it, but everyone can invest in, you know, stocks, bonds, and mutual funds here at the firm. Most employees just do mutual funds. But then I can invest in real estate if I want. And really any employee could. You have to go off the plan. There's some procedures on how to do it. It's a little tricky, but it's an option. So a lot of people have always been stuck, a lot of business owners that have employees that want to self-direct in particular, and they get stuck because they can't put money anywhere else. But if they put it in their 401k with all their other employees, all the companies out there, the Fidelities, the Vanguards that run the industry, they don't want to let you buy anything else but stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. So you kind of get stuck. We figured out how to navigate through it to make it possible. But it does take some work, and it's certainly more expensive. So I just want to give that little caveat there. Anything else on 401ks or SEPs or employer, self-employed people?
Well, I was just going to say, you said navigate. Is that where the name Navigator came from?
I guess so. I don't know. It actually came from a Matthew McConaughey commercial, you know. He's driving the Lincoln Navigator. I don't know if you know this, but he doesn't get paid to drive Lincolns. He just always thought they were cool. The Lincoln lawyer, straight from Matthew McConaughey. All right.
You do kind of look like Matthew McConaughey, I will say. Do you ever get that?
I get it a lot, actually. No.
That's a compliment. That's meant to be a compliment. Yeah. Obviously, that guy.
Yeah, he's Kevin's seen me at the beach. He knows what's up. Just kidding. All right. Well, last topic I wanted to delve into here, and this is a really important one, is when to do a Roth account. So, you know, we've talked about IRAs and 401ks. You can have Roth IRAs, traditional IRAs. You can have a Roth 401k, traditional 401k. And the difference between Roth and traditional is here's the big difference. In traditional, we've always thought, great, I want to save money on taxes now. I'm putting my money in. I get a tax deduction. This is how retirement accounts started. This was the deal Congress gave, is they said, we want to incentivize you to put money away for retirement. As long as you save that money and keep it invested up until retirement, we want to keep incentivizing you. And the break you got was when you put money in, let's say I put $5,000 in my IRA or $5,000 in my 401k, I got a $5,000 tax deduction that year. And so, like the 401k example I gave, or, you know, let's say I put $53,000 into my 401k, all traditional dollars, I got a $53,000 tax deduction that year. That's freaking awesome, you know? And when I'm filing my taxes that year, I paid less tax than I would have if I had to, you know? And for someone that makes that type of money that would max it out, I mean, they're saving 20 grand plus in taxes. So that's a huge perk and benefit, and that's the deal on traditional. Now, the catch on traditional is it grows tax deferred, and when you pull the money out at retirement, age 59 and a half or later, you have to pay tax on the money as you pull it out. So that's the bummer. They get you on the back end. But they let you put money in. It grows tax deferred. You got tax deductions along the way. So it's, you know, it's a good deal, really. It's better than not putting the money in. So that's the deal on traditional accounts. Now, Roth accounts are the exact opposite. I put money into a Roth. Let's say I put $5,000 into a Roth IRA or $5,000 into a Roth 401k. I don't get a tax deduction for it. I don't get a pat on the back or anything. I mean, I put $5,000 in. That's it. Now, the cool thing about it, though, is, and this is the perk and why you would do the Roth, is it grows tax-free. As you make money, you're not paying taxes, you make money. But also, when you pull it out, there's no taxes you pull the money out at retirement. Remember, the traditional, you had to pay taxes, you pulled the money out. The Roth, there's no taxes you pull it out at retirement. That is like the only way left to make money tax-free in the United States is a Roth retirement account. There is no other way. I don't know any other way you can actually make money legally tax-free, okay? Don't ask Wesley Snipes for his advice or, you know, or any of these other celebrities that have done time in jail for tax fraud. But the Roth retirement account is really the only tax-free vehicle left. So that's the perk of the Roth.
Sorry to cut you off. Not yet. I just going to make a comment that on the self-directed side of things, that's because of those benefits you just talked about that the Roth offers. That's why you know, you don't have to use a Roth to self-direct, but that's where a lot of these self-directed investors are using Roth, is because of the windfalls. They have an investment opportunity they think is going to really, you know, skyrocket. And so, you know, they may pay tax on the seed, you know, right now, so to speak. But, you know, if that investment goes well or like they expect it, it's a windfall. They're not paying tax on the harvest. So
Yeah. Yeah, that's the seed and the harvest, you know. You just, for the farmers out there, you know what we're talking about. And I love that principle, though. I mean, it's in some of my presentations because I don't know how to say this. I'm trying to move as much money to Roth as I can. I am an aspiring Roth account holder myself. That's the way to say it. I love the tax deductions. Don't get me wrong. I've been using them, and that's where most of my money is in my 401k now. But I'm converting stuff to Roth as I go. And I want to kind of talk about why you would want to do Roth or traditional. Now, if you have lower income years where you're in a lower tax bracket, like you're making less than $80,000 a year, I would be doing Roth. Your tax deduction is not as valuable for to do a traditional. Definitely do Roth because the tax-free growth and money coming out tax-free is way more valuable, in my opinion. For those of you in a higher tax bracket, though, particularly those of you in like California, you know, where you're in a 35% federal rate and a 15% California rate, you're hitting 50% plus on taxes. That traditional deduction is pretty sweet. So, I mean, you're saving 50 cents on every dollar you put in taxes. So I get it. That traditional deduction is a really, it's really a big deal. I have a lot of clients, high income clients that just love doing Roth and in the 401k in particular, because they get the value of, they know they always have to pay tax. They always think taxes are going to be more. So they'd rather it just be Roth now and get the tax-free deal on the way out. So I just want to say, and this is a personal preference thing, and this is why I say not everybody should do Roth. Not everyone should do traditional. If you're looking at your tax situation for the year and you're like, I've made a lot of money this year, but I don't have the cash to pay taxes, maybe just do traditional then. Give yourself the tax break. If you can pay the price, though, and you've got the cash, you can contribute, and you don't need the tax deductions, do the Roth accounts. Or maybe you got some lost carry forwards, do the Roth account. I even have clients that have, you know, traditional accounts. When they have losses in a year, they do Roth conversions, and they convert over all their traditional dollars to Roth, which is the Roth conversion, something I want to talk about too. So it's not one size fits all. I'm not kind of the type that says do Roth or do traditional. It really depends. For me, though, the reason I'm trying to go Roth, and like I say, I'm an aspiring – I honestly, it's like working out, you know. You got to pay your dues to get the good body or the Roth account or whatever it is, you know, you're going for. I just have to just suffer and pay my dues and start – converting all the traditional dollars I've been putting in over these years. So, but I love talking to my clients that have Roth accounts and seeing them grow and knowing, and those clients, they love those accounts more than anything. That is like the one place they love because they know it's like the best tax deal out there. And so that's the Roth account. All right, on Roth versus traditional, anything you want to say? I'm going to talk about the backdoor Roth and maybe some Roth conversion points, but just making that decision between the two.
Yeah, and I think it is not, you know, an all or nothing proposition, you know, one size fits all, but I do think there's a couple other just perks I'll throw in about the Roth. And, you know, like number one, if you have an IRA, then you know that, you know, when you reach the age of 70 and a half, the IRS wants their money back, the income tax that they've let you defer. So you have to start taking distributions. But with the Roth IRA, you don't have that. And so I think that's just a little perk. I guess one comment I'll make before we move on, Matt, is, you know, some of the small differences between the Roth IRA and the Roth 401k.
Yeah.
You know, with the Roth IRA, the problem, and you're going to talk about it, is, you know, there's restrictions if you make too much to make direct contributions. And a little perk with the Roth 401k is you don't have those income restrictions. Mm-hmm. And I guess the last thing I'll say real quick, with Roth 401ks, you do have those required minimum distributions. So just, it's a little nuanced, but I think just back to your topic, your point, you know, big picture, there are reasons to do both, and it just really depends. And don't assume that everything that applies to a Roth IRA applies to a Roth 401k. So,
yeah. Good point. All right, that's the great transition too, because I want to talk about this backdoor Roth IRA. Sounds pretty, you know.
Sounds shady, man.
Sounds pretty salacious. Huh? Because what happened? This is kind of a, you know, our tax laws force this type of procedure, frankly. So Roth IRAs, as Kevin mentioned, not everyone can do a Roth IRA. If you're a high income earner, you cannot do a Roth IRA. You can always do Roth 401k, but you can't do a Roth IRA. They have an income restriction on it. But Congress allowed anyone to convert to Roth IRA. Now, what you do then is instead of doing a Roth contribution, you do a non-deductible traditional IRA contribution. You're not getting a tax deduction for it. And then you convert that to Roth. Easy enough. So you just do a conversion. Now, there are some nuance to that, particularly if you're maxing out other accounts. But I do this. I do the backdoor Roth. I do it for myself and my wife every year. We've been doing it the past couple years. I love this strategy. I just want to even say this. I max out my 401k, everything I can, you know, through my legal practice. Have some company matching. I max out my own employee contributions, but also I'm doing the backdoor Roth IRA on top of that. So you can max out your 401k and still do this backdoor Roth IRA and put $5,500 in a year. Now my wife works outside of here part time. She at least makes the $5,500 a year in that job. They don't have a retirement plan. She doesn't qualify because she's part-time. So I do a backdoor Roth IRA for her as well. So because of my love for Roth. But this backdoor Roth IRA is pretty cool. I have a blog article on it on my website. If you're like, what is that? I've never heard of it. And the backdoor method really just refers pretty much to making a non-deductible contribution. You're not getting a deduction for it. It's called a non-deductible IRA contribution, and then you simply convert it to Roth. So there's no tax because you're converting something you didn't get a deduction for, but now you get it to Roth. And if you're high income, you kind of get around that high income rule restriction. That's the backdoor Roth IRA.
I love it. You know, I think the theme of this show, Matt, is the love affair between Matt and Roths. We're seeing it
really
right here.
Came out, huh? Didn't it?
Yeah.
I wasn't planning on that. I guess, you know, that's just deep down. That's where my heart is. I guess it is. I didn't, you know, sometimes you just don't know. All right. Well, any other final comments you have on retirement accounts? Anything we must say before we close out choosing the right retirement account for your situation?
No, I mean, I think we've hit the high points. You know, it there's a lot to think about. It can be a bit overwhelming. Definitely we can help out with that. But I think just that big picture perspective is important that, you know, either way, you know, the whole point is these are vehicles that are at the very least, they're income tax deferred. So that's better than obviously a taxable account. So, you know, it's kind of like we're talking about, you know, the better of the two options. They're all really good options.
Okay, well, thanks everyone for being with us today. As you're leaving this topic, I don't want you to stress out though. Sometimes, like, I think people hear all this stuff and they're like, it's information overload. There's a lot of other resources we have on our website between mine and Mark's sites. Search our blog articles. I've got stuff on solo 401ks and contribution rules and the backdoor Roth IRA, comparing the solo K versus the SEP. That's got just a lot more detail. But here's also the thing to keep in mind. You only need to figure this out once. Just figure out the structure that works best in your situation, and you just do the same thing every year. It's not like you got to refigure it out every year unless, you know, things change or you start a new business or, you know, whatever. You get married or divorced, you know. But if everything stays the same, you just keep implementing the same plan every year. But you want to start at the beginning to make sure you've got the right structure that really maximizes benefits in your specific situation. Implement it once and then just keep rocking away. Keep rocking at it. Do the same thing every year and stay calm, everyone. and retire on. Thanks for being with us today. We'll see you next week on another amazing hour of the Refresh Your Wealth Show. Mark Kohler will, of course, be joining us with his sprightly and vivacious character. Right now, actually, he is on vacation in the Bahamas, and there's like Hurricane Matthew going on right now in the Bahamas. I don't know if you know that. He has not texted me, which is a little weird, but apparently things are safe there. I've been trying to track the news. So, but thanks for being with us. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.